George Pelicanos is keeping busy these days. He's the co-creator and writer of the HBO series, The Deuce. The show finds him working with David Simon again. George and David have worked on a couple of other shows you're probably familiar with, The Wire and Tremé. Besides working in television, George still finds time to write best-selling crime novels, 20 so far. His latest is called The Man Who Came Uptown. The book's main character discovers a love for reading while in prison, which strongly resembles this scene from The Wire.
All them books in his library. Now, he fronting with all them books. But if we pull one down off the shelf, ain't none of the pages ever been open. He got all them books, and he ain't read near one of them. Gatsby, he was who he was, and he did what he did.
George dedicated The Man Who Came Uptown to Charles Wilford and Elmore Leonard. You've probably heard of Leonard, but maybe not Wilford. His work is worth knowing, as George explains.
There was one book in particular called Pickup that is about a couple of alcoholic lovers in San Francisco in the 1950s, in the late 50s. And throughout the book, every time they go into a bar, they go someplace public, other men want to kick this guy's butt, you know, the guy, the male half of the couple. And you're wondering why, you know, what did he do and that kind of thing. So the very last line of the novel is describes him as a tall, lonely Negro walking in the rain. He's black, and you don't know it until the end of the book.
Oh, interesting.
And it forces you to go back and reread the book because everything changes, the meaning of everything changes.
Yeah, but sure.
In this book, I never identify the race of the protagonist or anyone else.
Yes, that's true.
And
yeah.
Most people have not caught that, and you're really the first person to ask me in an interview about this. It's an homage to him, and the reason I did it was it just always bothered me, myself included, that white writers will always say, and then I saw a black guy on the corner, but they never say, and then I saw a white guy on the corner. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
And so all I'm trying to do here is see if it works. And so far, nobody's complained. They've figured out who everybody is without me mentioning their color.
Yeah.
And to maybe inch it forward in terms of the discussion of all this.
Yeah. Besides that, this one example, how else has Wilford's fiction influenced your own? Has he influenced it in any other ways?
Well, I think he was known as a crime writer, as I am.
Right.
But he was trying to do something more with the form, and he did. And I'm not comparing myself to him, but that's certainly somebody who I have aspirations of mirroring.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Interesting. Yeah, the Man Who Came Uptown follows the character of Michael Hudson, who finds a love for reading while he is in prison. And you've led these kinds of groups in detention centers for, I think it's 20 years now. Mm-hmm. What have these workshops taught you about the role that books can play for prisoners incarcerated?
Well, it's very important in their in their lives, the ones who are reading. Obviously, not everybody reads when they're locked up, but the guys and the men and women who are reading are really impacted by it positively, of course. And besides the fact that reading for anybody broadens your worldview and takes you places that you can't or don't want to go in your everyday life, it's especially impactful for a prisoner, because when they go into their cell at night, they can escape that cell through reading. You know, their thoughts and their minds go somewhere else, and in effect, they're no longer locked up while they're reading a book.
Yeah, they're enjoying some freedom. Yeah, yeah. Early on in The Man Who Came Uptown, you refer to a book called Behold a Pale Horse by Milton William Cooper. This is one of the most popular books in the American prison system. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yeah, I would say it's the most popular. It's a book of conspiracy theory. You know, everything from JFK assassination to UFOs.
Yeah.
And it's very popular in prisons, but many jails and prisons outlaw the book. They don't allow it to be part of the library. And they say the reason is because it gets people too jacked up. It makes guys get into arguments, and arguments often lead to other things. I don't know. I'm not going to give any commentary on that. But that's and then the author was actually killed by police.
Yeah.
Which deepens the conspiracy thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. Michael Hudson discovers a love for books while in prison. I'm curious, where did you discover your love of books?
Mainly through a teacher at the University of Maryland, Charles Misch. I took an elective class in crime fiction my senior year, and he turned me on to books. And I had never read books like that before. I'd always been forced to read books in high school and so on that didn't speak to my world. You know, when you're given the Scarlet Letter, if you're not that kind of person who's really intellectually curious enough to delve into a book like that, you're going to put it aside, as I did, because I couldn't, you know, like, Scarlet Letter, I don't really care.
Yeah.
But the crime novels were, aside from the crime part of it, which is the least interesting thing for me,
uh-huh.
they were about working class people, and it's a world that, you know, where I'd grown up, and, you know, my dad owned a Greek diner in D.C., and all the people that worked there were working class, and those are people I related to, and my friends, and so on. So all of a sudden, I discovered a branch of American literature that was, in my opinion, was populist.
Yeah.
And it got me all stoked, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember, was there one or two books in particular that you can remember reading while you were taking that course at the university?
Yeah, I can tell you the books, but they were, you know, it was Chandler, The Lady in the Lake. I don't know why he chose that one. It's not his best book, but, you know, all of his books are pretty good.
Yeah, that's an interesting film, though, right? You've seen the film version where it's all told from point of view of the detective, yeah.
Yeah, Robert Montgomery.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting experiment. I couldn't help notice that you mentioned that crime is the least important part of the books that you just said that about books in general. So I'm curious, do you think that applies to your own work? Do you think the crimes that are occurring is the least important part of your fiction?
Well, I try to keep my eye on the reader and make sure that I'm entertaining people with that aspect of the book. So I do a lot of research to make sure that the crime aspect is very realistic. And
mm-hmm.
But for me, what it does is it's a narrative engine. You know, it allows me to tell a story, but what I'm really interested in is the people in those neighborhoods and what their lives are like. And I do want to mention, because you asked me, some of the other books.
Yes.
Red Harvest by Dashiell Hammett.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And one book that really was very influential for me was The Deep Blue Goodbye by John D. MacDonald.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a phenomenal book, just on its own right.
That's not one of the Travis McGee series, though, is it?
It's the first
one. It is the first Travis McGee. Okay.
Yeah. If you have not read it.
No, I know. I've got to read it because you're speaking highly, and I know Stephen King is often, like, raved about John D. MacDonald. Yeah, I'm missing out. That's what's missing in my life. I haven't read any John D. MacDonald. Yeah.
It's a long life, man.
Yeah. I don't have that much time left. But, you know, well, especially who knows these days. But yeah, but thank you for your optimism. All of your books have taken place in your hometown of Washington, D.C. I'm curious about how the D.C. serves as a muse for you, how it inspires your work.
Nobody was really doing it when I started. Nobody was writing about the city, the living city, with people who, you know, have been here for generations and so on. All the books were political, or the Pentagon, and I'm not interested in that at all, but I wanted to read about the town that I knew. And then as I started and got into it a little bit, I sort of figured out what I was going to do with my life, which was chronicle this city, its history, and its present. And by in the end, have a whole library of books that, you know, in 100 years, I hope that there are still libraries and people can go into a library and see what D.C. was like in 2018 if they read The Man Who Came Uptown. You know what I mean? So I'm leaving a record, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a great thing to do. The theme of gentrification can be found in your new novel. At one point, Michael Hudson talks about not being able to believe all of the changes. Do you miss the old D.C.?
Yes, I do. When I grew up here, Washington was about 75% black. It's a black city. I mean, me, it still is, even though it's really 50% now. And all the culture that went with that was very exciting for a young man to grow up in that atmosphere, the music and everything else and the clothing and, you know, the cars. I mean, I'm a guy who still thinks the 70s was the best decade. It was mm-hmm. the most exciting decade.
Yeah.
But you have to recognize, you know, you might have to have enough self-recognition to know that a lot of that is nostalgia. And I don't want to fall into that trap because this city is in a lot better shape than it was when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
The homicide rate is way down. The employment rate is up. There's a lot of jobs. There's a lot of healthy businesses. And, you know, the only thing that I still feel that we need work on is keeping people in the city who work here and producing enough affordable housing so that a lot of different kinds of people can live in the city and not just elites.
Yeah, just to have a mix of people from various classes, various backgrounds. Yeah, that's important to the existence and to making a city interesting, the diversity. Yeah. Your characters often have blue-collar or working-class jobs, and in The Man Who Came Uptown, it seems that success is defined by getting a job with health insurance. Is this your take on D.C., the country's working class, and kind of a redefinition of the American dream, that things are so bad that that's like, you know, the gold star, or is just getting health insurance?
I think it's a big piece of the puzzle. I mean, I'm in a union, the Writers Guild of America.
Yeah,
I'm very supportive of unions. Back in the day, when you take a city like Baltimore, which I'm intimately acquainted with, and
of course, yeah,
when there were union jobs, when the factories were up and the docks were thriving and so on, if your kid didn't go to college, which is not all kids should go to college or can. You could get them into the union, and they could have a career with a pension and health insurance, and they could have a middle class life. Those jobs are not readily available anymore.
Yeah,
and it's caused a lot of turmoil in the cities, which we documented on The Wire, season 2 of The Wire. It was very blatant.
Well, you come by that kind of cash, you know you ain't had the days.
Oh, definitely not. Because my father's in the union.
Seniority prevails, Zig. It's the only way to keep it halfway honest.
I know. I ain't complaining.
I wish I could give you more. You don't think I want to throw you more?
Oh, you throw plenty.
It's just, Christ, Zig. Maybe if I'd have listened to your mother, because she's the one always
Pop,
talking about you should do the community college like your brother.
Pop, don't.
Having health insurance, having a pension is a good step towards having a successful middle class life, or at least a chance at it.
You've been a writer for many critically acclaimed TV series such as The Wire and Tremé, but your new HBO series, The Deuce, which of course is set in the 70s, which George Pelicanus says is the best decade, The Deuce marks a bit of a career change for you. You're the co-creator along with David Simon. What's the biggest difference being the creator of a TV show?
I mean, you get to make more decisions that impact the way the show comes out. And obviously, you're the boss. So, and I like it. I mean, I like running things in the same way that I liked the control of being a novelist. You know, all these years, it's just been me writing these books. And I wanted to get to that same place in television where I could, my vision could be end up on the screen along with David's. You know, we're partners. So That's been a good thing for me. And I'm always, I'm very goal oriented. Obviously, I've done a lot in my career, and I continue to work really hard. And I'm gonna keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, lucky for us, because we're the beneficiaries.
Thank you. You're
probably best known for scripting the penultimate episodes of TV show seasons. In fact, we could even call you penultimate Pelicanus. Hmm. And yet during season 1 of The Deuce, Megan Abbott had that honor. We had Megan on Beta, our show, a little while ago, and she had this to say about that passing of the baton.
It's a big transition episode. It is the George episode, and he's never let me forget that he let me do it. I don't think it's ever going to happen again.
She's right. She left the show shortly thereafter. So, on her own accord, I should say.
Did she really leave the show?
Yeah, but she left to do her own television show based on
Oh, that's
books.
Right. Yeah, Dare Me. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so we didn't want her to leave, okay. By the way. She wrote a great episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's very talented. Yeah. What is it about your work that had you writing the penultimate episodes of The Wire and Tremé?
I think, what happened was is the very first thing I wrote for The Wire season 1 was the episode where Wallace is killed by his friends, and played by the 14-year-old Michael B. Jordan.
You should have stayed down in the country, man.
You boys,
you put this on yourself.
You ain't gotta be like this. Oh,
come on,
that's us, man.
Do it, goddammit, if you're gonna.
People, I don't want to say they liked it, because it was a really sad thing to depict on screen, but they thought it was pretty good and well done. And after that, David gave me that episode where consequently a lot of things happen and there's a lot of death and so on. The Stringer Bell episode where Brother Muzon and Omar hunt Stringer Bell down and so on. Then when the death of Snoop, I got to write all that stuff. Now, you know, the thing about having your own show is you have to give up some things, too. And I can't always write that episode. And I actually wrote it for this season, that season two that we're in right now. I did write the penultimate episode, so expect carnage.
George Pelicanos is the author of The Man Who Came Uptown. He's also the co-creator and writer of the HBO series The Deuce. You can find out more about George at WPR.org/beta.
And I knew kind of along the way, this is just something that a villain in a John Hughes film would do.
Courtney Hameister joins us to talk about her quest to overcome her chronic anxiety with the OK, Fine, Whatever project. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.